This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervey, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, I am here, as usual, to be the managing partner of your life. We are excited because we have a great show today. Kerry Kasem, welcome back to Gervey's Law. It's nice to have you on our program.
Consecutively.
I'm just kidding. 2 weeks in a row. You're not traveling the world. It was a depressing week this week, at least for me.
Yeah.
And
why?
A lot of Angelenos here, even though I'm not a native.
Okay.
You know why?
No, tell me why.
The Dodgers.
Oh, the Dodgers, of course. I thought you were going to tell me something. This is, yeah, that's old news. That was not good. But it was really bad. We went down in flames. I mean, it was a great season, though. It was fun. The games were fun. But yeah, that was bad for us.
Yeah, it was.
I had a good week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, great news.
Great news. I'm glad because there wasn't a lot of it.
Yeah, the fraudulent wrongful death suit that my dad's wife, Jean Thompson Kasem, put on me, my brother, my sister's husband, my lawyer, Troy, was dismissed.
It was dismissed?
Yeah, so it doesn't pay to write up a fake lawsuit just so you can put lies about your husband's children in something. It just doesn't pay. It's been dismissed and we're going full force with our wrongful death suit and she will be exposed for what she is and what she's done.
Wow. So is her attorney going to appeal the dismissal?
No. It's a longer story than that, but she actually had no jurisdiction to sue us up there in any way. She lied stating she lived in Washington and then said, oh, I didn't understand what a citizen of Los Angeles. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, I'm glad to hear that is good news, but I think the more important news is that you pursue your wrongful death case against her and whoever was helping her out so that there'd be justice done for Casey Kasem.
That's right. Liberty and Jean will, there will be justice for my dad. What they did was horrific. And I did post about it this week. I know you saw it.
Yes, I did. I've been looking at all your posts. Our Facebook page, Gervey's Law, is really clean. It just talks about the law. It talks about the guests we have on. But Kerry is not affiliated with the Gervey's Law Facebook
page.
It's a disclaimer.
You put out something last week, Alan. It was like, listen to Kerry go off on Lisa Bloom and her stepmother.
I did. We tweeted listening to Kerry going off on Lisa Bloom and her stepmother.
And so now there are a lot of celebrities, lawyers and victims who are now going off on Lisa Bloom. Much deserved.
Well, you're the leader of the pack. And again, I'm going to stay away from that. I want to talk about today's show because we have a great one. Later on in the show, we're going to have Daryl Gross on the show. And he is a CPA. And he's going to talk about the tax reform proposal that came down this week. There's a lot of discussion about what will happen. He is a partner at Gish Seiden. And he knows his stuff. He's an amazing accountant. So you want to listen if you want to get the inside on the tax proposal and what might happen in the coming weeks and probably months. Before we bring Daryl on, we're going to have Phil Hernandez on the show. He is with the National Employment Law Project. They've just filed an amicus brief in the Texas versus EEOC Equal Employment Opportunity Commission case, which deals with employers' rights in Texas to terminate the employment of people that have criminal records or have been accused of crimes. So it's really interesting because NELP, as they're known, has been helping out and Phil Hernandez talks about how these laws are discriminatory against African Americans and others and how people who have had criminal backgrounds or perhaps have been accused of a crime should not be discriminated against because of their past if they're trying to work and get jobs. So that's something to listen for. But before we get to all of that, and if that's not enough, we have a very exciting and interesting guest coming on, because there is an important movie coming out shortly. And I'll tell you why it's important, because I was a philosophy major at Brown in college, and I wrote a lot on people's motivations, why they act the way they do, whether they're altruistic, whether they're egoistic, whether their behavior can be altruistic, but they're really doing it for themselves, or whether, in fact, a human being can truly be an altruistic person dedicating their life to justice. And the movie is called Roman Israel Esquire. It played at the Toronto Film Festival, which is a film festival that I like to go to. And we have with us today Dan Gilroy, who is the director and screenwriter, and you may know him because he was very successful with a little movie called Nightcrawler, which was an amazing movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Rene Russo, his wife. And he got a nomination for Best Screenplay in 2014, which was a great movie, and he also was screenwriter on Kong, Skull Island, Born Legacy, Real Steel, and others. And the movie will be coming out in limited release shortly, and then in full release around November 17th. And it has Denzel Washington, which I know he is one of your favorites, Carrie.
I love him.
I know you do. I know you love him. You say a lot of nice things about him as opposed to some other people.
Hey, there's only two people in this world that I've actually said bad things on air about. Literally.
Okay. Let's turn to positive. Dan Gilroy, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much, Alan. Feel bad that the Dodgers lost, but Carrie, I'm really happy about your dismissal.
Oh, thank you so much.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Yeah,
well,
very happy.
Thanks for the intro. I appreciate the intro.
But you've got to be excited, Dan, because the movie's coming out, and I just want to read a quick blurb that came out from Natalie Mockery. She said, "More than just a suspenseful thriller, however, the story works on a deeper level, too, showing that it's not meant to just keep audiences on the edge of their seats, but rather to make them think of the consequences of devoting oneself to a larger cause." It's a compliment, I think, because in filmmaking, you're either one or the other, but to combine the two, Dan, how did you do it with Roman Israel Esquire?
Well, it's interesting. You talked about your time at Brown, and I guess what you'd call the conflict within each one of us to either sort of go for our higher natures or go for sort of making a buck and surviving. And I very much see people, I see myself that way. And the character of Roman is somebody who very much embodies that. He's a character who for 40 years has been a very strong idealistic progressive lawyer who's worked under the tutelage of a mentor who was very big in the civil rights movement. And when you write a story about a character like that as a screenwriter, you have to decide how much of that will be plot, how much will be character. So as an example, you could take a character like that and you could inject a very big case and make it a courtroom drama, which had a big sort of climax at the end. Or you could do a pure character study. What I tried to do was balance the two. And if you've seen Nightcrawler, which is very much a character study of Louis Bloom, who Jake plays, I like to balance the two. So I think if that positive review, and I appreciate it, I think is picking up on the fact that this film, we're setting up a very unique character in Denzel, and we're not taking him down a traditional path of pure plot. We have plot, but it's very much the internal struggle, the choices that the character makes throughout the movie that really drives the story.
You know, it's interesting because when I alluded to that story when I was at Brown, and you were at Dartmouth just up the street.
I was, yeah.
And I'll tell you, it really bothered me because I brought in Mother Teresa and I tried to determine whether someone like Mother Teresa can really inside be that altruistic and really want to devote their life to good, or is she really only satisfying an internal need to feel good about what she's doing, not really focusing on the betterment of others and society. And Roman Israel, the lead character, Denzel Washington's character, seems to be so focused and so committed to doing the right thing that you wouldn't question that there's any ego in there?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So Mother Teresa is obviously somebody who had a very big public persona, got a tremendous amount of praise globally for what she did. And I don't know enough of her story, but I guess you could certainly make the case that ego might have been in play there. And I'm not saying that's the case, but you could perhaps argue that. The character that Denzel plays, Roman, is... like I said, he was inspired as a young man by this big figure in the civil rights movement. And when the movie starts, Denzel's character Roman has been working for 40 years in this very small two-person criminal defense firm in downtown L.A. And Roman has a gift. He has this savant-like memory for law, and he's led this very sheltered life working in the back room. He's been writing the briefs and the filings while this partner has made the court appearances and sort of served as the firm's public face. So in Roman's case, he's never really gotten any recognition at all for what he's done. And if you were going to apply the same yardstick, say, that you were applying to the Mother Teresa scenario, it wouldn't really apply to Roman because Roman's gotten no accolades and no recognition for what he's done whatsoever. He's been utterly selfless and true to his ideals, and I think his life would have been fine if it had continued that way. But when the movie starts, his mentor, the public face of the firm, dies. And this brilliant but socially awkward character is set out into the world to try to fend his way, and he's utterly ill-equipped to deal with the realities of the world. And that's really where we take Denzel's character.
Interesting.
What Denzel and I are excited about is that you've never seen Denzel play a part like this. I mean, I'm sure many of your listeners have seen most, if not all, of Denzel's films.
Right.
And you literally, I can promise you, you've never seen him like this before. He utterly transformed himself physically and from the inside out. He's raw. He's vulnerable. He's mocked. He's invisible. He's a man that you'd pass on the street and not even give a second glance to.
Right.
No money. He's selflessly really dedicated himself to an ideal. The law is his religion.
It's an interesting distinction that you bring up because, you know, when we think about it, when we think about people who give charity anonymously, no one ever knows about the good deeds they do. This is what you're talking about versus Mother Teresa, who's out in the media. We have to take a quick break, Dan, but we'll be right back. We're talking to Dan Gilroy. The movie's called Roman Israel Esquire. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hi, I'm Steven Singer, the I Hate Steven Singer guy. You know what I hate? Phony sales, cashback, coupons, rebates, bonus points, frequent flyer miles, membership rewards. Why is it so hard, so complicated to save money? If they really wanted to save me money, then just charge me less. Why do they make me jump through hoops? How about just treating me like a real person? At Steven Singer Jewelers, we don't play these pricing games. We have one store, one place, one price. Whether you shop with us online, by phone, catalog, or in our showroom, you'll know you're getting the best price every time. We never have a sale, never have a rebate, never have any special offers. Just one place, one price. You don't have to scour the internet to look for deals. You don't have to wait for some momentous occasion like Columbus Day to take advantage of some phony sale. At Steven Singer Jewelers, you always get the best price. You're going to have fun buying a diamond for someone you love. Buy real jewelry from a real jeweler. Steven Singer Jewelers. Visit me at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. By phone, 888-I-HATE-STEVEN-SINGER. Or online at IHateStevenSinger.com. One place, one price.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/search for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/search. That's match.com/search. Match.com/search.
If you need cash now, you need WeFixMoney.com. WeFixMoney.com could help you get up to $2,000 sometimes by tomorrow. And you don't need perfect credit. It's free to apply and available 24/7 from your computer or smartphone. Get up to $2,000 for rent, bills, child care, expenses, car repairs, or anything else. Trust WeFixMoney.com. Trust the name you know, WeFixMoney.com.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Yes, you're back. We're back. And the bumper just said that anything can go wrong can go right. We always take the positive approach, and that's something that we're talking about right now with Dan Gilroy, who is the writer and director of a new movie coming out called Roman J. Israel Esquire. I was talking about the Natalie Mockery, which one of the reviews, there's a number of reviews, positive stuff being said about this film. It balances suspense and a little epistemic or metaphysical discussion. And I'm a philosophy major, so I can bring out these big words that I don't get to use very often. She wrote, in true poetic fashion, sometimes our heroes must devote themselves entirely to a cause to see change without ever really thinking of themselves. And whether or not that should be is what Roman J. Israel Esquire asks us to think about. So this is a thinking movie. A lot of people I know want to go to the movies, not only be entertained, but also think a little bit. It makes us think, Dan, what does Roman J. Israel Esquire, and before I didn't say J, I know the name had been changed.
Right.
Was it after the Toronto Film Festival or before?
No, that was before.
Before.
It had a different title before.
And tell us why that name is so important. And I imagine Denzel Washington, who's the protagonist and star of the movie, had something to say about the title.
Well, the name itself comes from what we were just talking about. I believe that all of us have an inner conflict within ourselves to either go for some higher ideal or go away from our ideals into something more survival oriented, and Denzel's character Roman embodies that. So when I was conceiving of the character, I like this sort of historical biblical conflict of Roman and Israel as two words put together. So they're sort of in some way symbolizing the conflict within inside of Roman. I'm always interested in attorneys who put Esquire at the end of their name. I think it's a nice flourish.
And wasn't Roman really impressed with that? He seemed to be so proud of it, and you mentioned that he was kind of like a savant type character, but the Esquire part really meant something to Roman J.
Yes, and actually at some point in the film somebody asks him what the Esquire means, and I think what he says literally is it's a designation in the legal arena, a title of honor, slightly above gentleman and below knight. It's very important to him. The Esquire,
that's awesome.
That's one of the few accolades that he has in his life, is that sort of small flourish. And like we were talking about before, he's not somebody who's really in any way gone for the limelight. He shied away from it at great personal cost to himself. And you were talking at the beginning of just the intro of how you things taken wrong can go right. When Roman is set out into the world, you know, is this lifetime of cause-oriented advocacy suddenly has to switch to having to pay the bills.
Right.
And so the movie really is about this sort of loss of belief, but at the same time regaining your belief at the end as well, because the film is really about the blessing and burden of believing in something larger than yourself, which Roman does.
Now, when you're writing, were you thinking the entire time Denzel? Do you write for do your characters come to life with real actors?
I don't always write for the actor, but after Nightcrawler, I took a year off and I wrote this on spec, which means I wasn't paid for it.
Right.
I've never met Denzel. I wrote it for Denzel. Had Denzel decided not to do it, I wouldn't have done the movie.
Wow.
I sent it to him, and I was in New York, and we had lunch. We had a three-hour lunch, and at the end of it, we shook hands and said, let's do it. And that was right before he started Fences.
That's amazing. And so when you did Nightcrawler, what about Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake was right at the top of the list.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But on this one, there was no one else.
No, there's nobody else who could have played the part. And if you see the movie, you'll see it's written for Denzel. But like I said, it's a part he's never played before, so it's not like I was playing to strengths that I'd seen before. I always imagine there's things that Denzel that he's never done. This is a very vulnerable character.
And don't you think that so many people will identify with that vulnerability? As a lawyer, I'm in court all the time, and I'll tell you, a lot of lawyers just have a lot of vulnerability. They aren't all who you would think they are when they take off their suit and tie or their dresses. And I'll tell you, I think a lot of people look at the Roman J. Israel character and will think, you know what? This isn't Wonder... You know, we go and see Wonder Woman, and I know that Carrie loved that movie, but this is for the common person who needs to identify with who someone on the big screen is that is part of them.
Well, yeah, first I should say I have tremendous respect for attorneys in general. And I think attorneys have gotten short shrift in films. I think it's a very difficult job. I mean, constitutionally, you're asked to be an absolute partisan to your cause, to remain neutral to guilt or innocence, and utterly have sort of ultimately no accountability.
Right.
If the client's innocent. Those are the things that are expected of an attorney. You know, when they do that, they're not sort of applauded for it or giving any sort of recognition for it. I think it's very difficult to be an attorney, to navigate the waters on the criminal side or on a public defender side or even on a corporate side. So Denzel's character is somebody who's trying to thread that needle all the time and make peace with it. And in terms of how other people can see into it, he's forced to make a decision against his beliefs at a certain point in the film and somehow come to grips with it.
You know, it's interesting because what you're talking about is what we face a lot, which are conflicts. And the film comments on plea bargains as one of the issues that attorneys often have conflicts with. Or, in this case, when Denzel's character accepts money for a reward for turning someone in, there's a lot of conflicting issues that we as attorneys and the lay people have to deal with when you're weighing money versus doing the right thing.
Yeah, because the opportunities also present themselves for that. I think as an attorney, you're presented with so many choices a day. Are you going to take a client? How are you going to advocate their case? At what point are you going to take a turn right or left? And yeah, it's a very difficult road to navigate, and that's partially what the film is about.
I want to go back to the fact that you said you would not have done this film if Denzel turned you down. So that means, and maybe I'm wrong, you've probably written other films or just have this stack of these scripts that you haven't done because of one reason or another.
Oh, yeah. No, I can say right now, most screenwriters that I know, for every 15 to 20 movies you write, one gets made.
That's crazy.
That's really, honestly, maybe that might be even too generous. But I have a couple scripts that I've written for people that because they didn't do it, I decided not to move forward. But yeah, Denzel became my creative partner. Had he not shaken my hand, I would not have not in the film. But as soon as he did, he became my creative partner on this. I wrote the script, but he very much created the character, the look of the character, the style of the character, lines of dialogue, changes in the script. He loves the character, and he's fully behind it, and he really invested every part he had into it.
And you also worked with Jennifer Fox and Todd Black as producers. How involved were they with Denzel and you? Because I heard there were a lot of changes that were made after the Toronto Film Festival.
After Toronto. Toronto's a big film festival where you debut your film. We finished shooting our movie in mid-June. We cut our editing process radically in order to make Toronto. We finished in the cutting room on a Friday, and 24 hours later, we premiered our film. We had never shown it to an audience before. And we learned a lot. We were a little long. There was some reordering and structuring of scenes that we wanted to do. There was some music cues we changed. So after the film festival, we spent 3 weeks. We cut almost 13 minutes out of the movie. Denzel and I came up with some rather significant changes in sort of the order of scenes and music cues. And we loved what we had going into the film festival. We doubly love it now.
What's your next project? I want to know what's next for you.
The next project is in L.A. This will be my third movie in L.A. It's for Netflix. I'm bringing Jake back. Renee Russo, my wife, is going to be in it.
Love her, by the way. She's in one of my favorite films, The Thomas Crown Affair.
I knew you were going to say Thomas Crown. I knew it wasn't Pink Cup.
And you know, Dan, I bet you would say to Carrie, you love her too.
I do love her. I love her.
Very, very much.
You know what? You know what? She's such an inspiration. I remember that she went from being a model to an actress later in life. And I remember that was like one of the first women that made it when she was older. And she wasn't even old, but I remember hearing that. Like, she became big in an older age.
Mid-30s.
Yes. And I remember going, oh, that means that I could do that too.
You could do anything you want, Carrie.
I believe that now.
Yeah, so I'm bringing Renee and Jake back. There's going to be a half a dozen other big parts. Like I said, it's for Netflix. It'll be coming out next fall. It's set in L.A. It's set in the world of contemporary art, and it's not a drama. I can tell you that.
Okay. You know, I love the way that you focus your films on Los Angeles. And, you know, when we talk about Nightcrawler, we talk about Roman J. Israel, Esquire. It really is something that you seem to be proud of. And you have, obviously, Santa Monica, L.A. roots.
Right.
But it's really something that you can take these interesting mental thrillers and you bring them home right here to our city.
It's a fascinating place to live. It's a fascinating place to shoot a film. I think Los Angeles is physically beautiful. It's powerful. It's raw. Just in Roman Israel, we go from downtown to the beach, out to the desert, and you can do it. It's all geographically centered in one place. It's very. I grew up on the East Coast, which is also, you know, it's a very cement and ordered place. And Philadelphia, you know, New York, these are all very ordered cities. Los Angeles, to me, has a sort of raw, wild quality to it. You can feel nature, and it just is a visually beautiful place to live. So I love shooting films here.
You know, I'll tell you, we have to wind it up now, but I read somewhere that Roman J. Israel was Rain Man meets The Verdict. And I love both of those movies. I love Rain Man. I love The Verdict. So I don't know if we can compare those two, but when you marry, and this is how we started this interview, talking about marrying the thriller, the interest in the law, with the character-driven protagonist, that's really something that I think folks can look forward to.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. It's a little less Rain Man. He definitely has savant-like qualities. It's not nearly as he's much higher functioning yeah. to the point.
I hope so because I'm not going to go to court against Rain Man, I'll tell you.
No, I'm not either.
We're not watching not. Jeopardy. We're trying cases and we're doing discovery on cases. The movie's called Roman J. Israel Esquire. Now, tell us so we get it right. I know it's coming out in limited reviews at November 10th.
No, we're coming out the 17th and just two screens in New York and L.A. And then the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we're opening up wide across the country.
Well, we wish you all the luck with it. I think it's going to be an amazing film and people will love it. It's Dan Gilroy. The movie's called Roman J. Israel Esquire. Dan, we want to thank you for joining us. And hopefully you'll come back on the show when your new movie
yes.
is being released.
I would love to. Please invite me.
We will.
So
good luck and thanks for being with us today.
You take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. That's Dan Gilroy and the movie's Roman J. Israel Esquire. Look for it around Thanksgiving. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The deserter slash traitor, Bo Bergdahl, gets off with a tap on the wrist.
The first rule of teaching, don't bite the children.
And the Finns think I'm too fat to fly.
If you get on, I'm getting off. You're too fat to fly.
Get smart on the next McIntyre Morning 5 to 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. A protest against President Trump drew a smaller but vocal group of counter-demonstrators in downtown Los Angeles this afternoon, with the two groups of shouting opponents kept apart by a large police presence. The group Refuse Fascism started the demonstration at Pershing Square at 1 o'clock this afternoon. The Washington Post is reporting former Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Donna Brazile seriously contemplated replacing Hillary Clinton as the party's 2016 presidential nominee with then-Vice President Biden and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker in the aftermath of Clinton's fading spell, in part because Clinton's campaign was, quote, anemic and had taken on, quote, the odor of failure. KABC SoCal weather, partly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon with highs in the mid-60s to lower 70s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of rain with lows in the mid-50s to lower 60s. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
The season of gratitude is upon us. Hey, it's Leanne Tweeden. Thanksgiving means spending time with family and friends, whether the gathering is at your house or not. Don't let that water heater make a turkey out of you. Call the pros at SoCal Plumbers 911. They work around your schedule. SoCal Plumbers 911 are available 24/7. Yep, even on holidays. So if your pipes get stuffed, they're the ones to trust. Save $50 with their KABC special. Dial 877-PLUMBER or go to SoCalPlumbers911.com.
Shred the truth.
We think he's planning an attack.
Sell the lies. The Epic's original series, Berlin Station, returns.
We have a problem.
Let's go, let's go.
Timely and provocative.
Europe is in chaos.
Germany arrives.
The spy thriller you can't miss.
If he thinks for one second that he's being played, we're all dead.
With Ashley Judd, Richard Armitage, and Kiki Palmer.
Who says there are no friends in espionage?
Berlin Station, Sundays 9, 8 central, only on Epics. Watch free episodes now at epics.com.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, we're back. Carrie, that was was a great interview. I like that guy.
What a nice, down-to-earth man. Genius. And just, you know, he could have this ego, and he didn't.
No. Dan Gilroy. We just spoke with Dan Gilroy, who's the director of the new movie coming out, Roman J. Israel Esquire. And we love the movie because it's about lawyers. And I like it because it makes you think. And it will be released around Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, in wide release. And the guy's just a down-to-earth, great guy, married to Rene Russo. And Carrie, you were saying you're ready to interview him again.
Yeah, well, he's so great. I think we should have him in the studio. We have an awesome producer.
Genevieve Wong.
Yes, thank you, Genevieve.
She is awesome, and she is amazing with our shows. We have a great show next week, by the way, and I will surprise you because I don't even think you know.
I don't
who it
know,
is.
But every week is pretty good, and I've been really bummed because I have missed some amazing guests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And next week, we have someone who you will want to listen to. He has so much to say. He's accomplished so much, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
That's it. Just
what
leave,
are you looking at?
Him,
can you stop looking at your phone?
I know. I'm not going to stop looking at my phone because it's about the next guest.
Our next guest. As long as you're not, you know, texting Jesse or talking on your email. Phil Hernandez is an attorney with the National Employment Law Project. We like to call it NELP, National Employment Law Project. And they are really special people. I always admire attorneys who are doing such good work for nonprofits and taking care of people. People don't even know that people like Phil Hernandez are really looking out for them, the people who they work for. It involves employment rights of arrested and convicted people who sometimes are not getting a fair shot at jobs. And particularly now in Texas, there's a case, Texas versus the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and NELP assisted with an amicus brief recently relating to this issue of people getting fired, or one particular person in this case, after having a conviction many, many years ago. And I'm not sure how that affects or would affect a job that someone's doing, but apparently in Texas and there are other states that look at this. Phil Hernandez, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be on.
Tell us a little bit about this case that NELP assisted with, and you know, with the NAACP and the amicus briefs. Tell us what the issues are and why people should be concerned.
Absolutely. So this story really starts in 2012 when the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is a federal agency that helps to enforce federal civil rights law in this country, issued some guidance. And that guidance was really for use by employers, and it sort of sets forth some things to think about and explains how the use of criminal history may in some cases violate federal anti-discrimination law, namely Title VII of the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
And, you know, the guidance is not binding on employers. It's probably best to think of it as an educational tool, just to make sure that, you know, if you have a job applicant, you see a resume, and this person has, you know, let's say some minor offense from 3 decades ago, you know, what are the things that you should be thinking about to, you know, to comport with federal law?
Now,
so
I was reading about a woman, I think she was in Texas, she was, you know, working as kind of a crosswalk lady and 61 years old. And there she is, you know, helping kids across the street. And, you know, the human resources from the school comes out and brings her in, and they fire her because when she was 19 years old, she got into a fight. And yet they never looked at any of her other employment history and the fact that she did work and have other government jobs, the fact that she had never been arrested ever since. So it doesn't, I'm going, when is it fair and when is it not fair to fire somebody for their criminal? I mean, obviously that was not fair.
No, absolutely. We agree. And that's part of the reason why we tried to lift up her story. I mean, she, like you said, she did 28 years of good service to the city of Dallas.
Right.
She had a conviction from when she was 19. That was more than 40 years ago now. And, you know, one of the things that's important to note here is that conviction was actually set aside, and she's never been convicted of anything else since then. And so, you know, by all accounts, she's this terrific employee and went to go apply for a new job, as you mentioned, as a sort of bus monitor in Texas. And she was on the job, actually, for 8 days, and then she was terminated because of this, you know, conviction record decades past. And it's a really unfortunate story, in part because, obviously, what it meant to her and her income, but also because her story isn't really all that exceptional anymore.
Well, that's really the issue, Phil, whether this is exceptional, because people are listening saying, that sounds bizarre.
Yeah, it's wrong.
But maybe that is in that case, but there's got to be a gray area where people who are proponents of legislation of this nature want to be able to discriminate, and I use the word, I guess, inappropriately, but against people who have convictions because they stand behind and say that person may not be the best employee. So if it's not a gray area, if there was a conviction 10 years ago, let's say, or even 5 years ago, shouldn't an employer have a right to know that and to conduct their business accordingly without such an employee?
Sure, we're not arguing, and you know the EEOC guidance that is at issue in this litigation isn't really about hiding that criminal information. If anything, it's trying to help employers make sense of it, and in those gray areas that you were just talking about, make a really an informed decision that they feel good about in terms of bringing on a new employee onto their team, but also a decision that complies with federal law, Title VII. So just to give you a sense of what the EEOC standards do, they lay out, you know, if you have someone who applies to a job and has a record and encourages the employer to consider, for example, the nature of the person's offense, so what actually happened, how much time has elapsed since that offense occurred, you know, was this last year or was it, you know, 40 years ago in the case of Ms. Harrison that we were just talking about before. And also whether the offense is related to the job sought. You know, a lot of cases may be really minor. A person may have gotten into some trouble when they were a teenager, but it shouldn't stop them from, you know, pursuing a job to put solar panels on a house or something like that.
Right.
So it encourages employers to look at the connection between the conviction and their duties on the job.
But this is what's so frustrating to me is when you create a law, like if Texas passes this law and they, you know, you can fire somebody because of their criminal records instantly and you have these people who are, they are, I don't know, I want to say something, somebody that has no ability to observe, no ability to actually look at the situation. It's like big bureaucracy where they don't even look at, you know, each individual. Exactly. And so they can't see that, hey, this woman's been, you know, for 40 years, you know, working government jobs, been absolutely a great member of society. And, you know, then you can't tell somebody that has like maybe murdered somebody, has been fired, you know, every few months from a job. How when somebody can't differentiate and you have a law like that, you're going to be in big trouble. Because it seems like there's no, it's obvious. You're hiring somebody who's looking at records and they have no ability to decipher.
And that's part of why the EEOC guidance is so important. And it's, you know, it's a really helpful tool to help avoid, you know, liability under Title VII and the situation that you were just describing. And I do want to emphasize here that this really is becoming a bigger and bigger issue in this country. Right now, there are 70 million people across the United States that have either an arrest or a conviction record. In Texas alone, that's more than 13 million people. And, you know, if we are erecting policies that are meant to exclude these folks from the economy, then not only are we slamming the brakes on economic growth, we're making it harder for employers to find really good employees, even if, yes, they've made a mistake decades past. It is harming families because if, you know, individuals can't find work, then that creates, you know, less income and you're increasing poverty that spills over generations. And what's also true is that the best way to reduce crime in this country is to put people to work.
Yes.
And so it's hard to imagine a set of policies like the kind that Texas is trumpeting that is more counterproductive in every conceivable way.
And, you know, you didn't mention hypocritical, but I would add hypocritical, because in the criminal justice system, we're always talking about rehabilitation and trying to get people back into the workforce, back into society. And this certainly would be counterproductive if there were laws on the books that would prevent it, notwithstanding the goal and objective of trying to get people to earn a living and to be in the labor market.
Absolutely. I mean, that really is beneficial for all of us. Keep in mind, when you're talking about someone who was convicted and maybe, you know, was incarcerated for a period of time, after they're out, they paid their debt to society. And, you know, we should want them to be back in their communities, you know, maybe starting up new businesses, working,
right,
paying taxes. That truly benefits all of us.
So we only have a minute and a half here, Phil. Tell us what the future is for this lawsuit and for our country with respect to what NELP is trying to do to bring this issue out into the public, and what we can expect as we move forward.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This case really started in November in 2013. It's been going on for a couple of years, in part because of procedural issues, but the parties recently filed summary judgment briefs in September, and we filed our amicus brief last week, really to try and put a human face on this problem.
Right.
So hopefully we'll, you know, get a good outcome from the judge in the Northern District of Texas in relatively short order. But what I would also say is that, you know, although this litigation is unfolding, I'm fairly optimistic about criminal justice, at least at the state level. There has been, I think, a growing recognition that, sort of as I was alluding to before, excluding so many people from the economy really doesn't serve any of us well. It sort of undermines the economy, public health, public safety. And so what you're seeing is, and including in Texas, the legislature there recently sort of adopted a new policy that encourages employers to hire qualified applicants with records.
Right.
And that's Texas. And you're starting to see that in other states as well, whether it's through Ban the Box or, you know, fair chance licensing reforms or clean slate reforms in red states and blue states, Democrats,
right,
and Republicans. There is some good momentum on this.
Yeah, and we're going to have to talk to you another time on Ban the Box, because there was legislation recently, the AB 1008 in California.
Yes.
And I know you had a large role in that, and that's important. A lot of people don't understand the Ban the Box whole issue, but we're out of time, actually. We'll save it for another day. You know, I think one of the things that you bring forward is the discriminatory nature of these policies. And, you know, that's something that I think this country has to address and make sure that people are treated equally, regardless of their background, given due process. Phil Hernandez, I want to thank you very much for being with us today on Gervie's Law. Interesting stuff. And we'll check back with you to see how it all works out.
Sounds good. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Okay, take care, Phil. We're going to be back after this message. When we come back, we're bringing on Daryl Gross, who is a partner at Gischside, and he's going to talk about what the news was with taxes this week, the tax proposal, the Republicans and administration's proposals, and how it might affect you. Daryl Gross, after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Come with me on another journey around the globe.
From National Geographic comes an all-new six-part series with Morgan Freeman.
Searching for answers to humankind's biggest questions.
How can you hate me when you don't even know me?
Meeting inspiring individuals from all walks of life.
When people see someone helping another person, I think it's infectious.
This is what it means to be human. This is the story of us.
The Story of Us with Morgan Freeman premieres tonight at 9, 8 Central on National Geographic.
Geico presents Unhelpful Home Improvement How-Tos.
Overhanging trees present a real danger. During high winds, falling branches can damage roofs and windows. So today, I'll show you how to protect your home by wrapping it in bubble packaging. All you need is a staple gun and 142,000 feet of bubble packaging. Let's get started.
You could try to protect your home with bubble packaging, or you could get covered for personal property damage through the Geico Insurance Agency. Call Geico and see how affordable homeowners insurance can be.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
You're listening to Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, you are listening to Gervey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC, and they're playing Money this week, Carrie.
Yes.
We heard some proposals that may affect our money, our income, and our taxes.
Yep.
The tax reform proposals came out this week, and a lot of people have been talking about it, and I will tell you that it will definitely impact a lot of people if anything is passed, and that's a big if right now. We are welcoming to Gervey's Law right now one of the greatest accountants that I know because he's my own, and I'm so thrilled to have him on the show. Daryl Gross is a partner at Gish Seiden in Woodland Hills, California. He's a certified public accountant. They do an amazing job. I really am so lucky to have found Daryl and Marty Seiden. Daryl, welcome. Nice to talk to you. It's great to have you on Gervey's Law.
No, thanks, Alan. I'm happy to be on finally. I've heard so finally. Much about it. Finally.
Finally. I mean, we've been waiting for months and months and months for a tax proposal to come out, and now it does. And before we talk about the substance and hit on some important issues in the tax reform proposal, tell us what we can expect in the coming weeks and months, because they say, oh, yeah, we'll get this thing passed. But I don't think it's that easy, is it?
No, I don't think it's that easy at all. We've known this coming. We've done, education. I just happened to be at a conference, an AICPA, which is the American Certified of Public Accountants. It was an auto dealership conference. However, there was tax reform in there, and somebody kind of really close to Washington kind of gave his his version of what it is, and is, the president believes that Christmas, this is all going to kind of magically appear, but there's going to be a lot of internal struggles amongst even the GOP party to, basically figure out what's going to pass. There's going to be a lot of negotiation, a lot of give and take, and he thinks spring, at the earliest, we can actually see something that may actually pass.
Really? And that's a little ways away. So tell us what the major issues are that will be debated. And like you said, even within the Republican Party, there's not an agreement on a lot of these issues. What should people be thinking about and looking for in the coming weeks when these debates occur?
Well, I think, when I researched this and did my thing, the one thing that I did leave alone, which was kind of nice, is the 401k contribution. That is not going away, which I think is a great vehicle for people to put away for retirement. As accountants, we always tell you, put away as much as you can for the future. They were talking about knocking it down to like $2,500, still $18,000, so that's great. Everything else is kind of, it's kind of whirlwind. The president wants, on a personal level to, shrink those tax brackets. So right now we have 7. What he proposes is 4. And the proposal would be a simple 12, 25, 35, and a 39.6 tax bracket, which is similar to the highest rate currently. However, that 39.6% rate kicks in about $475,000. It wouldn't kick in till $1 million under his proposal. So that would be, a lot less people will be paying at that rate under his proposal, which is you know, huge.
When you say it kicks in at a million, does that mean everything under a million would be at a lower rate, or
yes,
does it mean
it
that anyone who earns over a million is taxed at 39.6 for the entire amount of their earnings?
No, it would be under, so anybody who made under a million would still be at a 35%, and then once you made over a million, you'd kick into the 39.6 percent of the bracket.
And what about the 25%? Where does that kick in?
You know, off the top, I didn't look exactly. I have the proposals right in front of me. I can.
No, it's okay. I'm just thinking that people are thinking about this, and there's a long way till it passes. There are a couple of other real controversial issues here. One of them being the deduction of state taxes,
yep,
which is being eliminated. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So currently, it's called SALT, state and local deductions, and in the proposal, those would be eliminated. So all your income taxes and mainly property taxes, what was on the table, would not be sales tax as well, would not be deductible for federal purposes. And this would eliminate that. And that would be a huge impact for kind of, you know, the high income tax states, which is California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Now, they did throw a little bit, they did leave a little bit saying, okay, and people that pay property taxes up to $10,000, you can still deduct that. But anything over $10,000 in property taxes, you cannot.
Right.
So,
I was reading that, and they said that that may not even pass itself in the entire, you know, estate taxes. And I'm hoping that if it is under a certain amount, like you said, that they'll keep it. And is that go for just how much the house is? So if you're paying $10,000 in property tax, you're looking at what, $1 million? So
yep,
anything over, you're in trouble.
You can't get it. Exactly. So that's why it's a huge hot button issue. And states like California and New York, where the property is extremely expensive, and when you buy a new property, part of your, if not all of yours, depending on how expensive your house, you only get a little bit of the deduction as opposed to all of it at this point.
And what about mortgages? That's a big one.
Yeah, so mortgages are huge too. So currently, under the current regulations, you can deduct mortgage interest up to a loan value of $1 million plus about $100,000 of an additional loan, so about $1.1 million. They want to just ax that at $500,000. But they grandfathered in anybody who currently owns a house. So this would be after the law passes and future purchases of a home. So at that point, anything over $500,000 is non-deductible. Only up to $500,000 loan values or interest would that be deductible.
So folks, if you're looking to buy a house, get it now.
I was going to say, does that mean that we're going to see a lot of people buying houses so that they can get their mortgages deductible if they're over $500,000?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of phone calls that said that, but the bill is very specific on future home purchases. So, you know, there is a grandfather a clause, and that may create an excess, you know, demand currently if this thing actually starts heading to being able to be passed.
And when you talk about future, you're talking about after it's being passed, not after it's been announced.
No.
Yes.
Currently, you know, all this is just proposed. So,
you know, the housing market may just take an upturn right now, but aren't the lobbyists for the housing market going to be really upset about this?
They're absolutely. I've already looked at some of them, and I believe both the new home builders as well as the mortgage lobbyists, both of them are extremely unhappy with the way this bill feels like it's going to detriment to further growth in this industry, and both have come out against this bill.
What do you think moving forward? We've only got a couple minutes, but tell us what you think the path will be for this bill. You've already talked about the debate and that a lot of people aren't happy. You're going to have lobbyists who are going to say their piece. What can we expect? And I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what will sounds like it's going to stick and what might not?
I think that I think that the corporate, we didn't even get into corporate rates being lowered from 35% to 20%. I mean, that's huge. And that you can do direct expensing of basically 100% of everything you buy capitally. I think that is one of the main sticking points. I think big business is set to kind of, be a big winner here. And I think that you know, that lower rate from 35, whether it stays at 20 or maybe ends up at 22, that is, I think, definitely going to stick. And I think the idea of the shrinking tax brackets, I think that a lot of people are going to get behind that. Whether the deductions are going to stay, I don't know, just because those have a lot more, you know, flexibility. It's all state by state. A lot of different coalitions are going to be arguing their side, and I think that they're going to be in for a battle in some of these other, you know, different, you know, state and local, mortgage deduction, you know, the elimination of AMT. There's going to be a lot of arguing amongst these deductions and, you know, how easy it is to get it and not.
How are you going to deal with that at Gish Seiden? And by the way, the website is Gish Seiden, SEIDEN.com. How are you going to deal with all the people hunting you down, asking you questions, trying to figure out what to do?
Well, the answer will be is obviously it's just proposed. Luckily, most of our clients probably still will still benefit in some way. You know, they may have, you know, they currently have mortgages that won't be impacted. You know, and what we'll do is we'll probably either have a seminar. I mean, what this will be is it's got to be we got to explain exactly what's going on to our clients. Probably with some new newsletters, we'll probably educate them as everything gets set in stone. We're gonna have to educate them because there'll be some planning to be done. We'll have to get out in front of it and, you know, ultimately make sure we help them make the best.
Daryl,
yep.
I'm going to be looking for it. We gotta close it out, but I'm going to look for all that educational material.
Yep.
It's Daryl Gross. He's a partner at Gish Seiden. They're in Woodland Hills. They have the answers. I've stuck with them for so long. They've been my accounts. They're amazing, amazing accounts. Daryl, thanks finally for coming on the show after 4 years.
Awesome.
You're finally
on
the show.
Thank you guys for having me. Yes.
We'll have you back, Daryl.
Awesome. Thank you guys.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening today. Carrie, what a great show.
That was really fun. Great guests.
All right.
Dan's awesome.
He is.
I want him back
next
here.
Week, we have a great guest. Don't miss it. Look for our Facebook page and you'll see all about it. Thanks for listening today to Gervie's Law on KBC 790.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.